You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. And for those of you that don't know who I am, I'm a keynote speaker, trainer, and consultant in the sector and published author on influencer marketing strategy. Influence is also the proud member of the Marketing Podcast Network, where you can listen to other amazing influencer and marketing related shows. But before we start, please don't forget to subscribe to this show just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. Now, in today's episode, I'm talking to PJ Limegruber, who is the founder of influencer agency Clash. And today we're going to be talking specifically about the booming creative economy and how so many creators have all sorts of ways in which now they can earn and monetize their content.
Been in the creator economy, I think, longer than the term creator economy has existed. So this actually started about 2013. I was working on a few of my own projects. The first was an e-commerce hat site, just a kind of a homegrown business. I was fresh out of college then and became really obsessed with all things digital marketing. This is sort of pre-influencers. So everything from SEO, email marketing, doing a little bit of YouTube videos, you know, sort of everything that a DIY marketer would need. And then from there, I started working in just general marketing consulting for my own clients, mostly like small to mid-sized businesses, and tried working with influencers and creators. And this is probably about 2013, and had a ton of success and found that there was just a big arbitrage in between the value that you would get from working out of creators, not only just from a authenticity standpoint of having a creator talk about your brand, but from a marketing performance standpoint, it seemed like an open ocean. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand why more companies and there wasn't more infrastructure around this. So in 2014, alongside my brother, who's my co-founder, we co-founded an influencer marketing agency called NeoReach. And NeoReach started working with brands and creators back in 2014. And we also developed a whole host of other products, mainly a SaaS software, a social intelligence API. And that company has grown tremendously over the years. It was kind of a small homegrown operation in the very beginning. We've since expanded to about 70 full-time now and work with some of the world's largest brands like Moose Toys, Tilly's, Macy's. We've even worked with Facebook in the past. We've got to witness quite a bit of growth in the space. You know, we got to see Vine get created and then ultimately meet its demise. We saw Musical.ly get acquired by ByteDance, and we saw the rise of TikTok. We worked with ByteDance directly through the launch of TikTok. So I got to see the launch of a new social network. So really got to see this whole industry build up and bloom and blossom around us. And it went from early conversations of just trying to convince marketers that to take a little bit of their spend and move it into influencer marketing and give it a trial, to now there's full teams built out to influencer marketing, you know, and you're an agency of record for a lot of these organizations that want to work with their influencers. So that was really interesting. And I think the biggest light bulb moment for us was less about influencer marketing and the evolution of that industry, because it's doing very well right now. Creators are having no problems connecting with brands and earning, and even micro influencers are making a living now. But I saw something else, and that was fan support and creators actually earning a living working for themselves and not necessarily being tied to content algorithms or being tied to brand deals. And, you know, we saw a little bit of this kind of emerge with Twitch in its early days. And then, you know, you saw a big rise of creators earning for themselves on OnlyFans, although it's adult content. And all these things sort of gave rise to what I think is the future of the creator economy, which is largely fan supported. And that was sort of the thesis behind founding Clash. So we started working on Clash in 2019. And we got off the ground in 2020, and then we actually launched our main app that's live today that came out in October of 2021. So it's been, it's actually been a couple of years now, but it feels like it's been a short ride.
That's really fascinating. I mean, I can only echo what you're saying. If you look at the gaming industry and how fans, particularly you mentioned Twitch as well, how they have willingly donated happily for being entertained and for shout outs and all that stuff. You get a real sense that the fan and the creator are totally engaged. And then, of course, OnlyFans has been another very successful platform. And it's reaching wider than it was originally set up for adult content. You know, it's much wider, of course, now, which proves its value. And what about more subscriptions and membership models? I mean, look at, for example, fitness creators, they've earned quite a lot of money, haven't they? Particularly during the pandemic with their own behind the paywall platform. From an analytics point of view, though, do you think it's a bit of a challenge when we've got a lot of these paywalls? Because we don't know what's going on behind them, of course, do we?
I think paywalls in itself is a challenge because what the creator is doing is they're taking content, which is generally free, right? You upload content for free to YouTube, you upload content for free to TikTok, to Instagram. You're taking a piece of that content and saying, hey, this is premium and this requires a membership or a fee to unlock. And I can't say for sure that it's not working because it is working. I think it lends itself to work better for certain niches of creators, but it may not be the one size fits all for the industry. You know, and that's why you see, you know, certain subsets of creators like traditional desktop creators, Patreon works well for them. I follow a music creator. I do music production as a hobby in my spare time. And I've learned everything there is to know about Ableton through one YouTube creator. And he has a Patreon and I support him a maximum monthly support every month for two reasons. One, just because I appreciate the time and effort he puts into his videos. And two, it unlocks a bunch of all the files and things that he makes on his channel get given out free to the Patreon subscribers. So I think there's a niche there with the desktop creators that works really, really well. But I don't necessarily think that model lends itself to the youngest generation, the most up and coming emerging generation of creators, you know, call them the Gen Z creators, if you will, the TikTok native, Instagram native creators. And I think that's the thing that we're really thinking about with Clash is how to make a product that works for them and the future new creators that are coming online every day.
And what about stuff like merch? Do you think there's a real opportunity for them to extend? I mean, what we've seen in the last few years is creators not only just amplifying other people's products, but of course, realizing that with big audiences and engaged ones at that, they can create their own brands or product lines within brands. There's been a big growth in that, hasn't there? So do you think that there is an opportunity for more of them to do more of that, co-creating of brands and indeed, you know, merchandise?
Yeah, you know, I think strength of community is the big underlying theme here. When a creator invests a lot in their community and they are able to identify who their top community is, and they've made some effort to segment that community, be whatever, you know, whatever channel it is, maybe they're just active in their comments or in their DMs. But I think when creators have that really strong community, everything they do thereafter then becomes successful because they've built a relationship with their fans and their audience, and they have a trustworthy voice. They're not sort of seen as a shill and somebody that just takes every sponsored post that comes down the pipe. And I think when you have creators that kind of look at fans, right? Fans are followers, and then you have fandom. You know, look at musical artists, you know, Taylor Swift and Beyonce, these artists have actual fandom as opposed to just a lot of people that listen to their music. And you see the same thing true even on a micro level with creators. You can see creators with 80,000, 150,000 followers that actually have fandom and have an audience that is really passionate about them and follows them everywhere they go and everything they do. And in that instance, I think the sky's the limit for what is possible with the creator. And merch is certainly something that fans love. It's relatively inexpensive. It's a decent margin product, benefits creators. So I definitely big believer in merch. I think with the precursor, the underlying community must be there.
Yeah. No, I agree. Are there some examples of some great individual creators that you know? I mean, you've mentioned that one that you particularly follow, but others that you really admire and are almost setting the way?
You know, someone to do it really early is not necessarily a huge creator, but Chris Melberger created a brand called Neat Dude. It was his own sort of merch line. he was an OG Viner back in the day. He's on Twitch now, but the brand has stayed alive, and the brand has almost taken it's not necessarily associated with his identity anymore. He's someone that wasn't necessarily a huge creator, but built a really cool brand, did very well off of his merch. And I think that was, to me, an early example of how even not massive tier one A+ creators can still drive massively successful projects, especially through merch. So that was one example that's always stuck out with me.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, presumably there are other ways in which creators can make money through like personal appearances. We've started to see more of that. I know at VidCon, for example, the big video festival that you have in America and indeed in around the world, I sort of witnessed that a few years ago. And I was just amazed at these photo opportunities and huge, great big queues and lines of people that would just be there. So do you think they can make money from that sort of stuff?
Absolutely. If you look at pre-influencer, right, things like athlete endorsement and athlete sponsorship, booking celebrities out to host the charity events and things that aren't necessarily online or public facing, but the celebrity spokesperson or the celebrity endorser, that predates the internet, right? That's all this time. People don't understand the cult of personality that some of these creators have, especially some of these younger creators. You see these models being repeated with creators, and the success is absolutely massive. And oftentimes for the brands or the person footing the bill on the other end, the cost is fractional compared to an A-list recognizable celebrity name. But the benefit to the brand and the benefit to have that creator as a spokesperson oftentimes is supercharged.
Yeah. I remember Toys and Me, Tiana Wilson, actually, she's got a massive YouTube channel, and she was at age of 14. There was a big shopping center mall up in the north of the UK, and there were like 20,000 people that came to visit this store just to see Tiana, and people were queuing outside for 5 hours, some of which was in the rain. She was like selling products every 12 seconds. It was just insane, to be honest.
And the average person walking by probably had no idea who she was.
That's exactly my point. And what, of course, you start to see now whole families become influencers, don't you, that are content creators. So what may start with one individual, as they grow, they then get married and then have children. If you look at the Kardashians, for example, how mega that brand has become. And yet it started with a small family and it grew and grew. So I'm guessing we're starting to see similar things in the creator world, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it's not necessarily mass appeal isn't the prerequisite here. It's any level of appeal, any level of community that the creator is able to build and cultivate is powerful and in many cases is enough to earn a living off of, even if you are by traditional metrics, it's small. Right. And that's what I love about the creator spaces and the creator economy is it's enabling so many folks to just make a living doing what it is they love doing. And that's very, very exciting. And that's not going to change.
No, I agree. And I often use the fly fishing expert as the example, somebody that literally is not even talking. It's just not even just talking about fishing, but fly fishing. It's very, very niche. You know, you could almost imagine somebody just talking about his kits, you know, sitting at the lake, and his engagement level will be very, very high for a rod manufacturer. Potential great partnership, wouldn't it? Because he's educating, he's inspiring, he's entertaining the audience in a way that you'd think, well, he's not got 25, 50,000 followers, but he doesn't need it because he's super neat, isn't he? Yeah, no, indeed. I mean, it is all about content at the end of the day, isn't it? Content reigns supreme. Do you think some of the tricks and styles that we see on video make a difference? You know what I mean? By the hand in front of the camera and they change. And particularly I've seen a lot of this in the fashion world because it's almost like, but there's so much competition now. They're almost trying to create their own signature content that people, that's an XYZ video.
I think the basic principles of psychology and attention always apply. That's why you still see the YouTubers make the "I crashed $1 million Lamborghini" prank captions and things. I think there's a certain formula that has kind of become the lingua franca amongst creators that they need to follow. And I think it becomes more interesting when you see creators that just can do it their own way and have their own spin. It's not necessarily about the quality of the camera or the quality of the editing or the production value. It's just about making it entertaining enough for your users and doing it in a way that's personal and feels natural to them. And I think the creators that understand those nuances are the ones that tend to do the best.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think that's why generally we love the authenticity of the creators way more than we do traditional advertising. And there's lots of reports, aren't there, now suggesting that particularly amongst that young audience, they are rejecting the sort of corporate ads, the email marketing, the cold call selling approach. They don't want any of that. They've almost got their own filter, which says, I trust my creator, my YouTuber, my Instagram way more than I do traditional advertising. And I think we're going to see more of that.
Oh, we're all consumers. I welcome ads if I'm on my music production channel and there's an ad or a product integration for a music production piece of hardware or software. Well, then I want to see it because it may be beneficial to me. And I think that's also the beauty of creators is you can sort of self-filter. And a creator that does a good job picking their brand partnerships, then it doesn't necessarily feel as much like an ad, even though it is. It's still going to be an underlying force of this industry. But the ones that do it well and can entertain while doing an ad, I mean, that's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, no, indeed. So somebody starting out now or with a relatively small audience as a creator, what would some of your top tips be to really be noticed?
So number one, when a creator is first starting out, stay focused on the growth, stay focused on posting content, seeing what resonates. Don't be afraid to try new things or different things. It's hard not to get caught up in the creating content for the algorithm. And I've seen that happen a lot with TikTokers. I've known TikTokers that have gone from 50,000 and met them up to multi-millions. And it's hard to, you know, there's this whole game of deleting content that doesn't perform well in the first hour. And then before you know it, everybody's doing the dance videos. But I think it's really important to be yourself and create the content that you like and really focus on audience identification early. Who are the people that watch your videos? Who are the people that subscribe to your channel and follow you? And start to build a gate around your ride or die fans, even if it's 50,000 followers and there's 15 of them that are really into it. Even if the number is small, I think the better thing for creators to think about is focus less on top line growth and more on building that strong core passionate community and audience. Because even if there's only 100 of them at the end of the day, that's actually enough to make a living off of.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about relevance, isn't it? It's about making sure you've got the right people following you. And then in terms of content, what sort of tips would you talk about when it comes to content style? How much should people be, you talk about consistency, how much do you think people should be posting?
You know, I'm definitely not a creator, so I'm not the expert there on volume. But what I can say is don't be afraid to take risks, try different things, see what resonates, interact with people in the comments, see if they're vibing with it, do all those sorts of things and try to temperature check as much as possible. Just remain creatively foolish, I think, is the most important thing.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Just to finish, give me a sense of what the plans are for Clash in the coming years. What's your vision for the future?
The vision is we want to make more full-time creators, right? I have a brother who's 18. We were in the early stages of developing Clash. I talked a lot to the next generation of creators, the kids that are 15 to 18, 19. And people used to dream of going to school to be a doctor or a lawyer. And now everybody wants to grow up and be a content creator. And everybody wants to be an influencer. I think over time, we're going to see a shift of more creators being minted. And that's why I love TikTok. TikTok is so great. Anybody can just be uploading videos on their phone and they hit the algorithm and then boom, they're a creator. And I don't want to mess with that. I don't want to take that away, right? That's a beautiful and very necessary part of the growth and minting of creators. What we want to do at Clash is we want to help those creators earn more full-time revenue. The top 1% of creators, right? They have no problem earning. They get all the brand deals. They make a ton of money in ad revenue. They're eligible for every ad partnership program. So for those guys and gals, no problem earning revenue. It's for everybody else. It's for the mid tail and the long tail where maybe the brand deals aren't as frequent. And it's really about how do we create enough revenue for a person that they can quit their part-time job or use content creation to pay their rent or use content creation to buy that new camera or that new phone or that new computer. Because that's really what the future of the creator economy is all about. It's for these people that are creating content, not necessarily influencers, but these people that are creating content, the real creators to be able to sustain themselves. And we believe that that future is fan supported.
Well, I must admit, PJ, it's been really lovely to talk to you, and so excited to see the business grow. And clearly, you know what you're doing, and I wish you all the very best for the success of your future.
Thank you, Gordon. It was a pleasure to talk on the podcast today.
How can people find out more about you?
So to find Clash, clashapp.co, we're available in the App Store and on Android. You can download the app. You can start shooting content. We have a digital currency inside the app, a digital good inside the app called Drops. It's a reward mechanism. So if people love you on TikTok or they love you on another channel, you can bring them over to Clash. You can personalize your content. They can subscribe to you there. They can send you drops. They can send love. And you can really focus on that audience identification. If you want to find me, I'm a person of the internet. I'm not too difficult to find. Mr. Peej on LinkedIn or Instagram, MisterPeej, Twitter as well. So I'm pretty easy to get a hold of if you ever want to reach me.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
That's it for another edition of Influence. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, gordon@gordonglenister.com. Or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, where you can also ask me a question. And if you're able to give us a 5-star review, we would really, really appreciate that. If you want help in creating an influencer marketing strategy, or you want to join the Influencer Marketing Roundtable weekly event that I host on Zoom, please just head over to gordonglenister.com and you can find out all about it. Also, if you want to find out more about our shows, go over to the MPM, which is the Marketing Podcast Network website, and you can find out more. Thanks as always to my producer, Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. Until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.